own head is relating to what you're seeing there. And I just meant that why it's cult TV that we're talking about here. We're not just talking about any TV. Yeah. And we're not just talking about popular TV. Because we've had some discussions among ourselves. What do we mean by cult TV? Yeah. And so I think, to me, some of it is like the difference between cult and church. It has its popularity, but it's a very specific kind of following that has something that's a hair outside the mainstream. At least, you know, maybe a whole cousin it outside the mainstream. There's something a little off. Of course, now, is Star Trek cult? Well, okay, or is it now church TV?
And can it be both?
But it has this massive following, and the following themselves, the majority of people aren't that kind of fan. So there's still, there are degrees of fandom, and there's the cult within the church. I
think it comes to this idea of watching it and then having it continue and live on in your mind. And in your relationships, in your daily life, whether we're wearing a little piece of nerdery around, you know, a Starfleet, what's it called? Emblem. That's the word. This is what happens when you take a red eye in San Diego Comic Con. Or if you have, you know, a little TARDIS in your office or things like that. I think when the show begins to extend into your life and extend into your mind and you start to play with these ideas and you start to think, well, how would the Doctor handle this? How would Buffy handle that? How would, you know, some of the characters, any clone clubbers here? We got clone clubbers? Yeah, we do. How would Tatiana Maslany handle this situation and all her different versions of clones? I think when it lives on, that's when it's cult TV.
There's a real value in fandoms, right? Because the excitement about a particular episode continues way, way beyond the episode. Mm-hmm. We form these wonderful relationships. There's a reason why you guys are here. How many of you have ever, if you met another person from the same fandom as you, you immediately became best friends? In fact, there was something like a dating site, but for besties online. I think it would be great if it included, like, what kind of geeks are you? What kind of things you like to geek out about? Because I think it would be a lot easier to find friends in person than to geek out about. And what's interesting is actually there's recent scientific evidence that shows that when we connect with other people, our bodies release certain hormones, such as oxytocin. They call it a love hormone. It's released when we either hug somebody or connect with somebody. But I think that hormone also gets released when we connect with a TV character. That's my hypothesis. We would need more research to prove that. But the cool thing about that is that this hormone actually physically helps you heal. It restores your nerve cells. It improves heart health. So it actually physically benefits you. And I think that's cool.
And it's, you know, there's a stereotype, right, that whatever fandom you're a part of, you're going to sit and you're going to watch TV and that's it. You're going to be this couch potato. Now, we all do binge watch. We're all guilty of that. And Netflix has released some of their data and they're like, yeah, like 70% of our customers are binge watchers. So it's normal. That's validating, right? However, once you've watched three seasons of Battlestar Galactica back to back, what's the next thing you want to do?
Go online
and talk about it. Exactly. That's the thing about this is these shows, we get so fascinated by the ideas, the characters and all of that, and it really becomes a social experience. You know, that's why we're all here at Comic-Con. That's the amazing part of Comic-Con is you find other people who we're all linked here by a passion and something that we love and we care about. And we form communities out of this. And it's those communities, those relationships that can be so incredibly healing.
Well, how many of you have friends you've never met face to face? And you meet online. I suppose there are other ways of doing it, like bathroom wall messages, but it tends to be online. And it tends to be particular topics. It may not be as specific as a TV show, it may be broader, but there's topics of interest that are pulling people together, and I really think the internet is making a big difference in these kinds of cult followings.
But we also have those moments of connection just with strangers. How many people here are in cosplay or see someone in cosplay that they recognize, and there's this moment where everything gets fuzzy? And you're like, I know, there's a random... I know you. No one else might know who you are.
Yeah.
But I know who you are. And then you take a lot of pictures with them.
Yeah, you're walking along with the very particular variation of the emblem from Mirror Universe or some such thing. It's like, and somebody just points. You know, there's this moment with another human being. You may not have said a word, but there was a real genuine connection with another human being in that instant.
Like, exactly.
You got the evil spa goatee. You got the evil Kirk glitter vest. And you kind of connect and all of that.
How did you know I have that?
Well, there we go. Speak of the devil. I was going to say something insightful, but now I forgot. I don't know what was...
I'm sure it was amazing, and it made me release oxytocin.
Probably, yeah. But, I mean, this is kind of... This panel is an example of this, too. We all sort of met each other because of our mutual interest in whether it's Doctor Who, whether it's Buffy or something else. We just met in person, like, 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So far, I think it's going pretty good.
I love you.
Yep, there we go. We took a weird selfie together.
No, we did.
So, but the real relationships online do translate to real relationships in person. We had that moment. You know who we just had that moment outside too. So we live in a world where it's hard to be a couch potato because it's so easy to connect with each other about these things that we love. And that's what's so cool. I think that's one part of why geek culture is becoming what it is.
Persistence. That's one of the most common things that I see throughout TV show after TV show after TV show is persistence being a good quality. You know, of course, you'll also see it in some of the supervillains and so forth. They're persistent too.
Go for it.
When I have a TV character that I relate to or that I even admire and they go through something tough, and they get through it, or they learn a lesson from it, I learn that lesson vicariously. And it helps me realize, okay, if someone that I admire and I don't know if I could ever be like can do it, I can do it. So that's, I forgot the question, but that was my...
What does TV teach us?
That.
There we go. I think it really can teach us values. And this is where it actually matters what you watch. We're all watching a lot of cool stuff, so I think it's cool. But I'm thinking about Star Trek, and it taught me infinite diversity and infinite combinations. Going from the original series, looking at episodes like Balance of Terror. Is there any fans of Balance of Terror in the room? Right, and so there's a lot of that prejudice and stereotype of Romulans that gets played out on the bridge, and when they find out what Romulans look like, and everyone looks at Spock, and Kirk's like, no, 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 we're not going to do that. Advance beyond that. The values of inclusion, and looking at shows like Battlestar Galactica, I use Battlestar Galactica in classes that I teach to show this is what an egalitarian society can look like. This is a world where your gender has absolutely no bearing on what you can do. You have infinite possibilities. You can be the president of the 12 colonies. You can be a gay admiral. You can be a male who cries. It totally broke apart our ideas of what it means to have a gender. And then we go to Orphan Black, which really takes this idea that any human has full opportunity to go in any spectrum of identity ever. Sci-fi and cult TV shows really teach us values, and I think a lot of those values are pretty awesome.
What love is, I think we learn friendship and Doctor Who, for example, in showing, in seeing that you don't leave your friend behind, in seeing what it means to be a true friend, that might be a takeaway message for us as well in our own friendships.
And these fantastic shows, they also let us look at some of the harshest realities where something that's a little closer to earth and more realistic could be so close it makes us too uncomfortable to ride through that to the point of it all. That additional step in that filter, you can look, like when I teach forensic psychology, there are some topics that are really hard for people to stay there and listen to. We're talking about some unpleasant stuff. But I can talk about, you know, fictional characters and who, you know, somebody who sees his family gunned down before his eyes. I realize that's comic books, but for me it started with TV, with Adam West. It's that kind of thing.
Appearing here at Comic-Con later this weekend.
Yeah. That fiction can let you go through and think about, learn some of the toughest things in life, especially with the sci-fi. Because also the thing about sci-fi is it has to be more real because the situation has this unreal, at least presently unreal quality. So the characters have to even be even more realistic. If you can't accept them, you really can't accept that. Other things, soap operas, they don't have to worry about that being realistic to human nature quite the same way.
Yeah. And a lot of those shows might be more escapism, which is cool. There's totally a time and place for that. And sometimes, you know, I went my last year of grad school, I was working like 18-hour days. It was horrible. All I did was I came home and I watched Community. That's kind of what I did. It made me happy. I'd seen a bunch of those episodes before, but it was very validating and all of that. And I think this idea of presenting stories and situations that are too difficult to discuss in another context is really a trait of a lot of cult TV shows. I've been watching a lot of the original series of Star Trek recently. I just got the Blu-ray. I got this amazing deal on Amazon. I got them super cheap. And I've been watching them again, and I watched this episode, Private Little War. And I was watching this, and I'm thinking, this is all about Vietnam. This was written as the Vietnam War was raging on, and they were able to get away with this on TV to have this complex debate about intervention in another country and this whole idea of domino theory and all that stuff. They were doing this in a time and in an era where you and I couldn't have that conversation on TV. We couldn't have a conversation about whether or not to invade Vietnam, but we can have an episode of Star Trek about the Klingons and the Federation and their get involvement in these hippy-dippy people and all of that.
I'm actually arguing that representation like that in TV shows makes us more compassionate. And being able to see different kinds of wars and atrocities that are happening makes it more digestible and easier for us to understand the wars that are going on now, like the war in Ukraine, the war in Israel, the war in Syria. And I think kind of also allows us to understand it on a different level, so that later when we're in a discussion or when we see it in the news, maybe it's a little bit less overwhelming, but also a lot more personal and easier to understand.
And some of it can be a foot in the door. You're sympathizing for these characters, like, oh, why are they being mean to so-and-so for having the pointy ears? And that right there can be a step toward, not for everybody, but for some, realizing, you know, I do some of that. It may not be ears, but...
Mm-hmm. I was actually attending a panel, that Max Brooks was presenting on zombies. Mm. And he touched on this topic a little bit in fiction in general, especially with zombies, where you can have this universe, the Star Trek universe, the Whovian universe. You can have this universe, and you can have these real-world issues, but by making it just a tiny bit different, it, like you said, opens the floodgates. You can talk about it, and you can talk about it in a way that it separates you, and you don't feel as hindered to talk about it, because you're talking about the issue, but not really.
Yeah, I just had that experience a couple of weeks ago, and this is TV because this series also had a limited series on TV. So, anyone seen Dawn of the Planet of the Apes?
Yes.
Okay, like five people. six people. Please go see this movie. It's
great. It was also a cartoon. It was a cartoon.
It's been a comic. It's been a TV show. There's been eight movies now, I believe. Anyways, watching that movie and watching some of the themes, and I'm not spoiling anything here, but watching it and then walking out of the theater and looking at the news and seeing what's happening around the world, it totally puts it in context and allows you to have that conversation in a way that you couldn't without that context.
Yeah.
Before we go to Q&A, I was actually hoping that we could each share maybe a personal or a professional example about when we might have been able to incorporate TV shows.
In what way?
Either in your personal life to help you overcome something, or in a professional life to help you either teach or work with a patient or student.
Well, so...
That sound brings hope.
Is it August 23rd already, or what?
Okay, so I grew up... Well, how many people here watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, or watch it? Yeah. How many of you guys can start singing the theme song?
Exactly.
Who remembers the episode where Will finally meets his father?
Oh.
Yeah. That was a pretty tough one, right? Now, I grew up without a father. And it was always one of... This is a personal example. Obviously, I didn't give therapy to myself. If I do, I cut my rate for that.
We can do that?
Don't tell me that I'm doing that to me.
Yeah.
But I watched that episode. And it helped me understand that, okay, this is Will, you know, this is the character, Will Smith, and he's funny and he's charming and he gets into weird situations. But he was also raw and he was emotional and he allowed himself to mourn. And he also realized that he had family and he had father figures. And that was a real turning point when I watched that episode, where I thought, I may not have biological father there to teach me the lessons that you would see in, say, Full House or Family Matters. It was a non-traditional family, but it was a family. And that was a really deep emotional turning point for me.
Mm.
Thanks for applauding my childhood.
So I, let's see. I'm going to share an example from my own therapy. So this was 2009. I've been working with this therapist for a long time, and I'm a big believer in you can't sit in that seat until you've sat in the other seat, and any good therapist needs to experience what that's like. But that's not why I went in for therapy. I went in for other reasons. apparently I was a bad friend. Long story. So... It was a time in my life where I was going through a huge transition. I was going to be moving out of D.C. where I had lived with my best friend from childhood for 5 years. I felt very comfortable, I felt very safe, and I was going to be moving to New York City, a very different place. My dissertation had failed.
Don't tell me that.
Well, no. This was prior to the defense. This was way before. You're fine. my dissertation was more like the Hobbit trilogy. Yours is going to be more like the Lord of the Ring. It's a subtle little jab there.
Yeah.
All right, anyways. Getting back to this. So I was going through this. I had massive anxiety about this change. And I felt like I was going to be completely alone. So my therapist, he was a big Lost fan. Any Lost fans in the audience? Any Lost fans before the final season? That's it. And he was a big Lost fan. I was a big Lost fan. And he said, do you remember that episode with Desmond leaping through time? And I was like, yeah, I love that episode. It's a lot like All Good Things, the last episode of TNG. And he goes, yeah, they ripped it off. But it's cool still. And this is the kind of cool guy he was. And he's like, do you remember the whole, how he got out of that situation? He's like, well, he had to find his constant. He had to find Penny and be able to connect with Penny. He's like, who's your constant? Who's going to help you through this time and this change? And it made me realize that no matter how much anxiety or uncertainty I had about the future, there was someone I could find that I love who could help me through that, completely change the way I think about it. It was one of those moments that just sticks with you for a long time. Yeah.
My number one story that comes to my head is actually too personal. It having to do with other people. I could see somebody blogging. He said this helped him relate to his dad. So I'll go for one that's a little, not as good as their stories. With a grandfather that I just would have trouble finding a way to relate and connect. And then be there, just something as simple as, there's a TV show, we're both watching it. It was old Westerns, it was Maverick, with James Garner.
I don't know what that response was.
He just died. Yeah. Oh. And Maverick is a legend. Maverick is a legend of the West. But this fun character is like, okay, we're so different in so many ways. And even as we got older, it was more. It's like, okay, he's in one direction politically, and I'm sure not that direction. And you guess whichever way it goes. But we can still relate to the TV show. We can talk about them and get excited about these conversations, even years later. Oh, there's that old Western. You should be Maverick still. And I could have these conversations. It would be the safe zone. We wouldn't veer into him referring to politics that would grate on me, or some of the racist stuff that he'd say sometimes. Okay, we can go to Maverick, and we're not going there. We could comfortably converse. And that made it easier to have other conversations.
Yeah. For me, I was 12 when my family and I moved to the United States from Ukraine. And I had initially kind of a hard time. I didn't speak the language, and I didn't know American culture. So what I would do is I would watch TV shows with the captions, so I'd be able to read and listen at the same time. And the show that I used to watch a lot was actually Family Matters. So I joked that Urkel taught me English.
Did he do that?
you need to drop that mic, Travis.
I really hope you guys rehearsed that.
But I actually think he taught me a lot more than that. Steve was always picked on for being different, and for loving Laura and for being so persistent. And yet, at the end, the message to me, at least the one that I took away from it, was be yourself and follow your heart no matter what. And that message really got me through some really, really hard times and allowed me to relate and allowed me to kind of adapt to the American culture better. So that show was very, very helpful to me. I'd like to now open the floor to questions. There's a microphone right there.
Does anybody has a burning question who can't easily get to the microphone?
Hi, okay, so obviously we spoke with him. So I guess this is really directly for you, but I'm going to answer. So Joss touches on so many concepts, and especially when the show came out, very taboo concepts, and some very literally like the death of a parent or figuring out you're gay, but some in a very abstract way, like Willow's addiction to magic or Buffy's depression after coming back from the dead. Do you think that making them very abstract almost makes
them
easier to relate to
in online? That's a great question. I think so. I'm not sure exactly what his intention was, but to me, it seemed really relatable. I think that I really connected with just with Willow's addiction to magic. I'm addicted to coffee, which I know is entirely different.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how sometimes there's the right way to react when someone has an addiction, struggles with addiction, for example, and then there's kind of the wrong way. And just kind of Willow's own insecurities and struggles with that, I think was really, really powerful. But I think because it's a bit abstract, it makes it a lot more relatable in a number of different ways, as opposed to if Willow was struggling, let's say, with alcohol abuse, that might make it so specific that might maybe alienate some other audiences. So in that way, I think he succeeded.
Yeah,
Whedon's great strength is getting human emotion, no matter what he's writing about. He even sees that in himself. He knows it's like this is something I get. He'll say it's like I may not get the science right at all, but I can bring real human emotion while I'm screwing up the science.
And he does relationships really well. I think that's whether films or TV. I think one more thing to add on to your question, and this gets to the whole psychology of cult TV too. if they were specific answers and if it wasn't abstract, I don't think the writing would hold up as well. And I think all these TV shows we were talking about, they're very well written, and they make you think there's no clear answer. We go back to those episodes of Star Trek, the original series, there's still no clear answer for this stuff. I think that's one of the reasons why they last, and that's one of the reasons why Buffy was in the 90s, and here it is, 2014. We're still talking about it. It's really well written.
A lot of it is the tact. I mean, how many of us remember the Full House episodes where it would be all laughs, and then you hear the music, and then you know that the lesson is going to come up, right?
Yeah.
Oh, she's smoking. That's bad. I know this now because of the musical cue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you, 80s TV. 90s TV?
Both.
Both. But with Whedon and with all these other science fiction shows, there's that tact where they're weaving the lesson into the storyline instead of having the storyline and then boom, lesson, which I think helps us absorb it more as well.
This is probably our favorite question ever.
I love that question.
Yeah.
So what I usually do is during my intake process, so the very first time I meet with a client after I've asked them all about their trauma and where they're coming from, I also incorporate a question like, what are some of your hobbies? Are there any TV shows you like? Are there any books that you read? And then if they say, I love Harry Potter, or I love Star Trek, or Doctor Who, then I know I have my in, and I usually follow my patient's lead and go with the show or the book that they're interested in.
And I think this is advice for therapists. It's also advice for parents. If there's any parents out there? Yeah, go parents. I think it's about as some of you are like, no, don't go. It's about finding out what the person's interested in, asking that critical question. What does that show mean to you? What does that book mean to you? What is it about that character that you like? The other thing I like to do as well is I like to make my office pretty inviting. And I have a TARDIS there. I've got an Enterprise. I've got a Millennium Falcon. But I also have a basketball hoop, and I have other stuff too. So, I mean, they're nerds too. Jocks can be nerds and geeks too. And if you're parents, talk to your kids. If they're reading a manga and they're really interested in it, ask them, what is it that you like about that? What does that character mean to you? And I think that'll get you a very long way. It's not about shoving your interests down your patients' throats. It's about finding out what they have and taking your material and making it more meaningful and giving them that context.
Yeah, those questions you're talking about, those are great, regardless of whether you have any idea. Yeah. Of course, and if they ask, oh, I do know this one. So, and it gets them excited. My wife is a therapist. And there was somebody she was doing an assessment with not long ago she was like, what do you like? And he named some video games. Oh, and well, she was asking specific questions about the game, and he just lit up. And he was saying, I don't know the content of what he was the client was saying, but he was sharing. And like his grandmother outside, all she could tell was that there was laughter from behind that door. It's like, he never talks to anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's great because, I mean, I'm an intern at a community college, and one of the ways I use it as well, including the questions, are visual cues, like a T-shirt or a button on a strap. Any therapist here, how many people here work with kids or adolescents? Yeah. How many of those kids and adolescents have an adult or an authority figure that actively takes an interest in something they're interested in? Not too many. But even if you don't know anything about it, say you don't know a word about, you know, the X-Files, but they're really into the X-Files because they're a retro adolescent or something.
They're a 90s hipster.
I was an adolescent before being an adolescent.
Yeah,
was
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can have them inform you about the show. So why is it important? Oh, who's Mulder? Who's Scully? Why do you
Good
like
question.
Him?
So I know that's why I'm here.
Are we getting royalties?
So we're hearing
in your experience, like what papers or articles that you've read or you've written that you found particularly interesting?
Maybe that's a good one for us to email and follow up with you.
Yeah. Nothing general or specific?
There are not many. There are a few articles out there. So for example, there's a paper. It's not a scientific paper. It's a theoretical paper that talks about, and it might be a case example, that talks about how using Harry Potter might be helpful in helping children heal. That's more movies and books, not cold TV. I'm actually working on a book right now. It's going to be a treatment manual for depression, anxiety, and trauma using geek culture. So it'll have TV shows, it'll have comic books, it'll have movies, et cetera, in it. We're in the process of starting a research study in a local prison to see if something like that would be helpful. But there are not many studies like that.
Yeah, and the main examples that are coming to mind in terms of books related to television and psychology are things that are better known. Like there's Dexter in Psychology, there's A House in Psychology, there's one called Doe, Psychology of the Simpsons, which is a surprisingly good book. And some of those can be useful in terms of ideas, you know, where you relate them to other things.
If you want to talk to us afterwards, yeah. I think a number of us can probably email you some resources.
The rest of you guys, you can come up afterwards and we can chat.
Last time we stayed until they drove us out.
You're not supposed to tell them that.
30 seconds.
I don't speak for myself, but I noticed a distinct lack of mention of animated TV shows. And I'm still hoping I'm not speaking for myself, but sometimes even though I'm surrounded by loved ones, I have trouble connecting to people, even though I know I love them and they love me. And sometimes those really like fantastic, crazy animated shows ground me back. Mm-hmm. And is there something to be said for that? Is there a reason it's not included? Or
thank you so much for bringing that up. That was an oversight on my part, and I apologize. I think Avatar, for example, is an amazing, amazing show. It's funny. I was sitting there as I was watching it. I had my hair.
I use two that come up often for me are Naruto and My Little Pony. Like, My Little Pony is so freaking good. It's so good. And I used to, now I did play with My Little Pony. I had my Little Ponies, my Ninja Turtles, and my G.I. Joes. They would hang out when I was a kid. So I was into My Little Pony before it was cool to be into My Little Pony. What is it about the animated shows? You know, I think they strip away a lot of the other stuff, and it's for an animated series to work, it just so has to be about the characters. It absolutely has to. And I think it, you know, the other one that comes to mind is Batman the Animated Series, which, you know, I mean, that's it. It doesn't get better than that. It comes back to these great, fantastic characters, and I think that's what appeals to us about it.
The animated characters, they're on the other side of that uncanny valley.
Puppets
will get into the uncanny valley. It's like, it's a little too close to people, and starts creeping you out. The animation is moving further away. And so, even when it's fairly realistic animation, you're still into that filter automatically, and you look at life in a different way.
It makes it more approachable. Walt Disney discovered this, and now there's science behind this, that you know, you can make these big eyes, and you can if you make an animated character look like a baby, we find them really cute. And this will help you explain why so many characters are so cute. I think the animation makes it approachable and then draws us in, but then the characters and the stories is what hooks us.
We need to add Psychology of F cartoons to the list of things
next
we want
year.
To get to.
Yeah.
That was called music.
We could go another hour on Futurama and mourning and grief.
That's a title right there.
There you go. Futurama, mourning and grief.
Come back here next year. We'll be talking.
There you go.
Okay, thank you so much.